Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 9, Text 46. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Suruchistam Samutapya. Pandavanatam Arbakam. Parisvayaha jivate bashva gagadayagira. Suruchi, the younger mother of Dhruva Maharaj, seeing that the innocent boy had fallen at her feet, immediately picked him up, embracing him with her hands. And with tears of feeling, she blessed him with the word, "My dear boy, long may you live." 947. Yasya pasano bhagavan gunai matya dibir hari tasmai namanti bhutani nimnam apa ivasvayam. To one who has transcendental qualities due to friendly behavior with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all living entities offer honor just as water automatically flows down by nature. Purport. The question may be raised in this connection, why Suruchi, who is not at all favorably disposed towards Dhruva, blessed him, "Long may you live," which means that she also desired good fortune for him. The answer is given in this verse. Since Dhruva Maharaj was blessed by the Lord due to his transcendental qualities, everyone was bound to offer him all respects and benediction, just as water by its nature flows downward. A devotee of the Lord does not demand respect from anyone, but whenever he goes, he is honored by everyone throughout the whole world with all respect. Srinivasacharya said that the six Goswamis of Vrindavan are respected throughout the entire universe because a devotee, having pleased the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of all emanations, automatically pleases everyone, and thus everyone offers him respect. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Daksurun Mulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Sapadantikam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siadvaita Gadadhar Sivas Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So please excuse me for being a few minutes late. I came back from kirtan every night in the house of, the Giriraj Swami's place, I guess we call it. Gunagrai Maharaj has incredible, wonderful kirtan, some of the best I've ever heard, honestly. So I came back early from that, and I thought I don't want to fall asleep during class, so I took a little nap, and then somehow it was longer than I thought, but I'm glad that I did get on here in time. And I won't be tired. So, a wonderful story. We know that this story is honored for Dhruva Maharaj's determination. And so interesting, too. And it shows you really how Krishna works. Somehow or other, to get what he would want, he was told to practice devotional service. And he practiced to such an intense degree. And being so young and seeing his determination and Krishna came. Vishnu came. What I like about the story is I think it's so relevant, and I think it's a lesson that we have to learn, is that he had motive, but Krishna saw the service that he was doing. And I think Prabhupada dealt with that way, and I think it's how Krishna deals. You know, it's we don't start at pure devotional service. Anya bilashita shunya. No other desires. But Krishna sees that our service. And yeyata mam papadyante tam sitaiva bhajam. And he rewards accordingly. He reciprocates. Prabhupada, in three words, gave just such a nice comment about Krishna somewhere in the Gita. Krishna is responsive. It's what a person is. A person is someone who, really, the essence of a person is that he reciprocates in love. At least a evolved person reciprocates in relationships. And that's the essence of bhakti. The essence of bhakti is that because God is a person, he reciprocates. Because he's a supreme person, he gives more than he takes. And that's called mercy. Definition of God is that he's all powerful and he's all good. If he's not all powerful, if he's not good, he won't help you. And if he's not powerful, he can't help you. But God is both powerful and good, so he responds. Of course, we don't always understand why he's doing what he's doing, but he's trying to give himself, because that's the supreme benediction. The supreme benediction is to have God. Because God is transcendental pleasure, rasa vaisaha. And if somehow or other we can remove the clouds of icha dvesha samutena, of material desire and envy, and we can experience the divine, then we will realize how valuable it is. And not pass judgment on the price that we sometimes have to pay for it. Sometimes we do suffer because the world moves against our attachments. But the real question is whether the world moves against our soul or not. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness is that the world moves for our soul, and even the difficulties that we have are for our soul. So, therefore, a devotee is patient, and he has faith. Because he realizes that what he's trying to achieve is not a small thing. It's just like someone wants to get a PhD. After you know, a week, you don't complain. After a year, you don't complain, and you're working so hard. After 5 years, you don't complain because you value what you are getting. So there's nothing greater than God and relationship with Him. And it may take time, but it's worth it, as the story of Dhruva Maharaj shows. He performed intense austerity in bhakti. And when he got God, he felt so foolish for approaching him for material things, even more foolish that it was granted to him that he would have a kingdom greater than his grandfather, his great-grandfather, Lord Brahma. He would have sovereignty over the three worlds. And he looked at it as asking for broken glass compared to the diamond of Krishna consciousness. And now in this very interesting story and so many factors, he's coming home. And we realize he left home because of the envy of his stepmother, who treated him so horribly, who, using her young and beautiful charm, was able to control the king, Uttanapad, or Dhruva's father, in such a way that his father allowed him to be insulted and stood by and did nothing. But when that caused Dhruva Maharaj to, under his mother's advice, when it caused Dhruva Maharaj to actually leave the kingdom to seek what he wanted, his father felt horrible. And then, because he's such a young boy, the father gave him up for dead. And now, after he achieved not only the kingdom he wanted, but more important, the relationship with God. This has to be our faith, that there's nothing higher than our relationship with God. Love is the highest thing, and love comes in relationship. And the supreme love is to love everything. It's universal love. It's loving the divine. And that love is the pleasure of the divine. And when you get it, you're not only satisfied, there's no, it's the greatest thing. So and the quality of it is, even at the practice of sadhana bhakti, at practice, one gets all qualities, which means he can attract everyone. There's nothing more attractive than purity of heart. That's the real source of beauty to a connoisseur of sight. It's the smile that comes from the heart filled with love. And it's so attractive. It's so attractive. It's all attractive. And so he's coming back, and now, surprisingly, that same stepmother whose heavy words pierced his heart, ruined his relationship with his father, and caused him intense pain, so much pain that he had to leave the kingdom as a young boy. He's coming back now, and his stepmother, or they say here, the younger mother, picked him up, blessed him. So her view of him changed. And the purport, Prabhupada quotes from the Sad Goswami Astakam, Krishna Kirtana. What is that? Yeah, Dira Dira Janapriyo Piyakaro Namatsuro Pujito. That the six Goswamis and saintly people, Dira Dira Janapriyo, they are dear to the Dira Adira, to the sober and the rough, to the gentle and the ruffians. Everyone, they're dear to everyone. They're matsuro pujita, and they're worshipful because they're non-envious. And when you're non-envious, you're not trying to control the world. You're trying to serve the world. Generally, before you become pure, you're looking at the world as an object for your control and enjoyment. And because environment is shared, you'll inevitably come into conflict with other people who look at those same things or covet the same things that you want. And that's the source of conflict, and that's the source of fear. And that's the source of fear in us. As long as we have material desires, we really can't be completely nonviolent, because we're going to be looking at the world in terms of our enjoyment, and therefore we'll have attachment to controlling it for that purpose, and we'll come into conflict certainly with others who are wanting to control the same thing for their own enjoyment. But someone who is non-envious, he doesn't have that attachment, he doesn't have that possessiveness, and therefore he doesn't have that envy. I was reading today, I don't remember the last few days, a comment that envy plus prestige equals violence, and don't we see it in the world, in words and action? But when you're free from envy and you have no prestige, then you're very attractive. And even those that are a little rough, they'll appreciate it. First principle anyway in yoga philosophy is ahimsa. And it says that when one actually perfects it, that means they don't have this consciousness of control or enjoyment, which necessitates control. You want to enjoy the world, you have to control the world. To control the world, you have to accrue power and resources to do things, to do so, which is another thing which comes into conflict with other people. But one doesn't have that. and therefore he's not threatening the people. Anyway, and not, so to be completely ahimsa, to perfect it, you can't really have this material desire. And when you do perfect ahimsa, it says in the Yoga Sutras, which I've been studying, that the fruit of ahimsa is that no one can be violent in your presence. You can pacify even the mongoose and the cobra, which are deadly enemies. So anyway, Dhruva Maharaj is coming back and he's attractive. He's attractive due to his relationship with God. Uttamascha Dhruvascho Bhav Anyonyam Prema Vivalau Angasangad Utpalakav Ashraga Mahur Uhatu. The two brothers, Uttama and Dhruva Maharaj, also exchanged their tears. They were overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love and affection. And when they embraced one another, the hairs on their bodies stood up. So, great emotion in love affects the mind. Emotion affects the mind. The mind affects the life air. The life air affects the subtle elements within one's body. And if it affects the water element, then tears come. The air element, the hairs on the body may stand on end. Sunitir asya janani panebhyo pi priyam sutam upaguyau chahabadim tarangasparsha nirvita. Suniti, the real mother of Dhruva Maharaj, embraced the tender body of her son, who is dearer to her than her own life, and thus forgot all material grief, for she was very pleased. So this was his real mother. And Pranabhya, she loved him more dear than her own life, and that's real love. Real love means your happiness is more in the pleasure of your beloved than it is yourself. In fact, that is your happiness. And that's what bhakti means. Bhakti means when your happiness is the pleasure of God. I was just reflecting the other day here, one of the most wonderful opulences of Vrindavan is, it's really amazing, but there's this black gate that opens the door to tens of thousands of acres of untouched Vrindavan, mostly just flower gardens. And anytime I want, I can go to one of these gardeners' most beautiful setting, and they will feed me gladly. I'm actually very close with them. And then I get flowers from my deities, and a little bag, and they give me roses, and they give me some jasmine. And they're so beautiful, they're so fragrant, they're so colorful. And I'm very happy because I have my deities, and I'm trying to develop a relationship with Krishna through them. and I'm happy to decorate the deities and get a pleasure of their pleasure. I wrote about this the other day in my Monday morning greetings, The Bhakti Yoga's Guide to Sense Gratification, that spiritually we have sense pleasure, but the consciousness is love. As a mother who cooks for her child out of intense motherly affection, may after the child's finished taste the same food, in the consciousness how much her child enjoyed. And that's real love. When you have real love, your pleasure is real love, deep affection in the heart. Your pleasure is the pleasure of your beloved. And so you offer the flowers, and they're so fragrant, they're so... And you look at them, and you look at them on the altar, and you get a happiness from that beauty and from that fragrance. But in relationship to the pleasure of the object of your love. So Prabhupada said that motherly love is the most pure love in this world. And therefore, it says she's more dear than her own life. And that's the standard of pure love. Payasanabhyam susrava netra jai salilai sivai tadabhishi chamarabhyam vira vira savo mahu. My dear Vidura, Suniti was the mother of a great hero. Her tears, together with the milk flowing from her breasts, wet the whole body of Dhruva Maharaj. This was a great auspicious sign. So there actually is a science of omens. There are things that happen around us that forebode the future. For example, when the left eye of a man or the right eye of a lady trembles, it forebodes something inauspicious. I have this particular proclivity. It's a little bit scary. But I know when something inauspicious will happen. I know. Because my left eye will start to tremble. There are signs. There are omens. And there are things that create auspiciousness. So one thing that creates auspiciousness is dharma. And when you do what's right, the future will be bright. It's just a science. And a person of culture is not expedient. They don't cheat for personal advantage, if only for the reason is that you will not get personal advantage. This week's Monday morning greeting, which those of you getting will read tomorrow, where I mentioned something like this, a realization I had in the Gita between the first verse and the last verse. And the first verse is Kurukshetra Dharma Kshetra. That the battle, Dhritarashtra wants to know what his sons and the sons of Pandu do, desiring to fight in this holy place of pilgrimage. Krishna is the protector of Dharma, and it's a holy place. It forebodes, it predicts the future. And the conclusion is where there is Krishna, Yogeshwar, the master of all mystics, and where there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will be victory, opulence, morality of this, there is no doubt. That has to be our faith. If we do what's right, what's best will happen. How will it happen and when it will happen? We may not be able to ascertain, but that it will happen, we should be certain. So this creates auspiciousness. Shivai, auspiciousness. When deities are installed, they are washed with milk, yogurt, and water. This ceremony is called Abhishek. In this verse, it has been especially mentioned that the tears which flow down from the eyes of Suniti were all auspicious. This auspiciousness of the Abhishek ceremony performed by his beloved mother was an indication in the near future that Dhruva Maharaj would be installed on the throne of his father. It's a science. It's like astrology is a science. It's a science of omens. There are certain indications that foretell the future. The history of Dhruva Maharaj's leaving home was that his father refused to give him a place on his lap, and Dhruva Maharaj determined that unless he got the throne of his father, he would not come back. Now this Abhishek ceremony performed by his beloved mother was an indication that he would occupy the throne of Maharaj Uttanapad. It's also significant in this verse that Suniti, mother of Dhruva Maharaj, is described as Vira Su, a mother who produced a great hero. There are many great heroes in this world, but there is no comparison to Dhruva Maharaj, who is not only a heroic emperor of this planet, but also a great devotee. A devotee is also a great hero because he conquers the influence of Maya. That is why a person of humility has such great strength, because the person of humility is able to resist the false ego, is able to resist the power of the very basic cause of this material existence, which is the desire to enjoy and control and feel superiority to others. That's such a driving force. And a humble person is so powerful that he can resist and fight prestige. So here he's saying that one who is actually a devotee is the greatest hero. Because not only will he do heroic acts, but he will not do them mixed with the desire to get accolades for them. When Lord Chaitanya inquired from Ramananda Roy about the most famous man in this world, who later replied that anyone who is known as a great devotee of the Lord is to be accepted as the most famous. Tam shasha surjanaragim dishyate puta artaha patilabdhas chiram nashto rasita mandalam bhuva. The residents of the palace praised the queen. Dear queen, your beloved son was lost a long time ago, and it is your greater fortune that he has now come back. It appears, therefore, that your son will be able to protect you for a very long time and will put an end to your material pangs. Avyachitastvayanunan bhagavan pranatartya yaranujayino dira mityam jigyu sudurjayam. Dear Queen, you must have worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who delivers his devotees from the greatest danger. Persons who constantly meditate upon him surpass the course of birth and death. His perfection is very difficult to achieve. Purport. Dhruva Maharaj was the lost child of Queen Suniti, but during his absence, She always meditated on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was able to rescue his devotee from all dangers. When Dhruva Maharaj was absent from his home, not only did he undergo severe austerities in the forest of Madhuvan, but at home also his mother prayed to the Supreme Lord for his safety and good fortune. In other words, the Lord was worshipped by both the mother and son, and both were able to achieve the supreme benediction from the Supreme Lord. The word Sudur Jayam, an adjective which indicates that no one can conquer death, is very important. I want to see that one second. Ordinarily, a king's son, only 5 years old, away from home in the forest, would certainly be supposed dead. But by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not only was he saved, but he was blessed with the highest perfection. So Sudur Jayam indicates that it's difficult to conquer death, but that the devotee does so. I remember when in Vrindavan, when this circus magician came to see Prabhupada and was performing his magic tricks. So Prabhupada, I told this story many times, and it went on for about an hour, and Prabhupada was enjoying it. And then finally Prabhupada said, "Can you conquer birth, death, disease, and old age?" And the magician said, "No." He said, "Then I can." And how do you conquer death? As sure as death, death is the greatest material problem. Because suffering is when you lose your attachments. That's the real suffering of death, that everything's taken away. But as I mentioned many times before, death is the illusion of non-existence. And therefore, one can conquer death by realization, by knowledge, by purity, by actually seeing the truth. The whole purpose of yoga is to come to a point where you can live within the self, which is eternal, full of knowledge, and bliss. The whole principle of ignorance, which is the root cause of all problem. What is ignorance when the pure, eternal, blissful soul identifies or thinks that it is the temporary, ignorant, suffering body? That's ignorance. So knowledge can destroy ignorance. And therefore, knowledge can help one overcome death. The whole platform of Krishna consciousness has to do with conquering death, because in the Bhagavatam, the initial question to Maharaj Parikshit is that Maharaj Parikshit asks, when he has 7 days left to live, is what is the duty of a man who's about to die, and what should he not do? And the answer was, if one wants to be fearless at the point of death, then chant here and remember Krishna. I know, I was just interviewed today, interviewing people that were there when Prabhupada was leaving the world. I was fortunate to have been in the room. Reflecting today how fortunate that was, that I actually was there when Prabhupada was able to leave the world and see someone that actually left in perfection. But I was relating, when Prabhupada came back from Rishikesh to Vrindavan and announced he was leaving the world, but he was saying, but what is death but a change of body? And then he quoted the verse from the Gita, Deheno smin yata dehe komadon yovanam jara tata dehankara patya deyatat. as the embodied soul passes from childhood to boyhood to youth to old age. Similarly, at the time of death, one goes to another body or becomes liberated. So the self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change, because the change is not happening in him. The change only happens in matter, and the people who suffer that are the ones that falsely identify with it. There's this term in Sanskrit, vikara. Vikara means transformation. The body is born, it grows, maintains, reproduces, dwindles, and dies. That's happening in matter, not the soul. And due to the desire to enjoy and control, then our consciousness is so powerfully, by that desire, is so powerfully reflected on the body that we identify completely with it. And then we for experience what it goes through, even though it is not us. The classic example is you have a new car and parked it outside, and then you hear a crash, and you say, oh my God, he hit me. And then you look down and you see it's someone else's car. But before that, you think he hit me, it happened to me. So before that realization that we are not the body, then we think it's happening to us. So by worshiping God, here it says you come conquer that. The sage Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, when everyone was thus praising Dhruva Maharaj, the king was very happy. He had Dhruva and his brother seated on the back of a she-elephant. Thus he returned to his capital, where he's praised by all classes of men. The whole city was decorated with columns of banana trees containing bunches of fruits and flowers, and betel nut trees with leaves and branches were seen here and there. There were also many gates set up, which were structured to give the appearance of sharks. Purport, auspicious ceremonies with decorations of green leaves of palms, coconut trees, betel nut trees, and banana trees, fruits, flowers, and leaves, an old age custom in India. To receive his great son Dhruva Maharaj, King Uttanapad arranged a good reception, and all the citizens were enthusiastic. All the citizens very enthusiastically took part with great jubilation. At each and every gate, there were burning lamps and big water pots decorated with differently colored cloth, strings of pearls, flower garlands, and mango leaves. In the capital city, there are many palaces, city gates, surrounding walls, which were already very, very beautiful. And on this occasion, all of them were decorated with golden ornaments. The domes of the city palaces glittered, as did the domes of the beautiful airplanes which hovered over the city. So there's aesthetic. And aesthetic is pleasing. And it also has a spiritual purpose. It affects the mind. The proper aesthetic affects the mind in a proper way to enhance its peace. Environment affects consciousness. Cleanliness is the object of sight and the mode of goodness. And therefore, it will move the mind to a higher level of perception and contentment. And the same thing with the proper culture, the proper music, the proper sights, the proper tastes. Done in the proper way, it will affect the mind in a favorable way to make it conducive for self-realization. I love Vrindavan, and it's the most beautiful place in the world to be. But there are some external challenges, and I can see they can affect the consciousness. Therefore, when people come here, the first thing I do is take them out to the forest of Vrindavan within 10 minutes in the beautiful gardens. So unencumbered by external sights, that may affect their mind in a way that they won't see the internal vision of the beauty of Vrindavan, the land of love and devotion. So I understand the effect. Purport, regarding the mention of airplanes here, it is suggested by Srimad Vijayadwaj Tirtha that on this occasion the demigods from higher planetary systems also came in their airplanes to bestow their blessings on Dhruva Maharaj on his arrival at the capital of his father. It also appears that all the domes of the city palaces, as well as the pinnacles of the airplanes, were decorated with ornamental work in gold, and being reflected by the sunshine, they were all glittering. We can observe a special distinction between Dhruva Maharaj's time and modern days, for the airplanes in those days were made of gold, but the present moment airplanes are made of base aluminum. This just gives a hint of the opulence of Dhruva Maharaj's day and the poverty of modern times. And the there is poverty. Even walk in New York City and compare what old buildings look like to new buildings. Old buildings that were made of stone with intricate carvings. And I remember going into my grandmother's apartment, one of my grandmother's apartment, and the ceilings, you know, they always had some beautiful molding. So even we can imagine, like 100 years ago, how much better the aesthetic was. What to speak of? Imagine living in New York City. If the Hudson had not been polluted, how opulent it would be. I often reflect on that. That one time, this was clear water that one could drink. You know, when I went to Croatia and the airplane came in, I was amazed. Because you could look down and see the rivers and you can see the bottom. They would laugh when they hear that we have to drink bottled water. Natural, you know, opulences. What to speak of the aesthetics? I remember when I came back from India after so many years, and I told this story many, many times. And my mother took me to the supermarket. When I had left for India, they didn't yet have the cash registers that register the items by touching them to the counter that there's a code written on a label. And when I saw it, I just was shocked, and I said, things have advanced so much. And then I caught myself because I knew it wasn't true. And I looked at the lady at the counter, and I said, but the quality of life has not improved. And it's so apparent today. So apparent today, it's screwing up psychologically. It's actually screwing up the populace. Because previously, your mother would open the door and you would go out and play. When I was young, you open the door and go out and play, and then you come back. In the modern age, would any mother do that? They have to be constantly supervised, the children. And therefore, there's a famous sociologist that I really, he has very relevant views. I wrote an article on moral diversity based on his teaching. His name is John Haidt, NYU. And he described the phenomena that at a certain time there was the Amber Alerts and children became overprotected. And they became too fragile. And therefore, they need safe spaces and trigger warnings. And people have become weaker. And in the modern world, just by the environment, and, you know, alarm systems and locking doors and crime and opioid epidemics and pollution and environment and lack of community. A godbrother of mine, he studied real economics. because Prabhupada asked him to start the Kisan movement or the farm movement. And he studied, he saw why ISKCON has failed Prabhupada's vision to establish farm communities. And he gave a very simple answer. Because we are conditioned to a false standard of opulence. Opulence for us has something to do with gadgets that distract us, rather than community, family, community with a place of worship. Nearby, the opulence of having your temple with your kirtans and your classes, the opulence previous to the village, where every night in the village there was great katha, talks going on, spiritual talks. The opulence of fresh air. The air in Delhi is like, it's like they say, it's like smoking 40 packs of cigarettes. The plastic bags that litter the streets. Previous, everything was biodegradable. The opulence of community, the opulence of worship, the opposite of organic food, the opulence of fresh air. But we're conditioned to a false standard of opulence. So the little simplicity that we require to deserve and appreciate that opulence, we think it's, we have a concept that it's not opulence. So we see here Dhruva emptying, all through the Bhagavatam, emptying the city. Prabhupada called the modern city dungeons of demons, and reflected that, you know, the wealthy people, they all have their country homes. Prabhupada would quote the poet Cooper, city is made by man, the country is made by God. Things that are natural, that come from God and haven't been exploited or transformed by the modes of nature that we're in, are very pleasing and beautiful. I noticed that a waterfall makes a sound, and it could be loud, but it's never disturbing because it is nature. But a man-made sound, a sound created by our modes of mechanics and mechanisms and cars, it's a disturbance because it's going against nature. And things that go against nature cover nature, and our nature is that we're eternal servants of God. And even when I came to India, we would eat off of leaf plates and clay cups. And, you know, afterwards, even poor people, they have these clay cups, you drink and then you throw them, and it's biodegradable. And I look at that, I thought this was $10 in Pier 1 imports, which is a clay cup. So the opulence, and now you have little cheap plastic cups. So Prabhupada said the poverty of modern times. Okay, I'm going to stop here now. Would anybody like to ask any questions? I'm glad that I did take that rest, even if I was a little bit late. Okay, anybody say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Bo. Hare Bo. Thank you. Some more people, just so we get our sense of community.
Maharaj, can you hear me?
That's Gail?
Can I ask a couple things?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. One thing is that, you know, I understand that Suniti really loved her son more than her own life. So I'm trying to reconcile that with the fact that she was able to see her son, her very young son, go off into the dangerous forest, where, you know, even the father thought he must die out there by himself, you know?
Yeah. If I remember the story, that was also her love for him, because he wanted to achieve something, and he was in anxiety. And she knew that that would be the only way that he could fulfill his desire. And she was so aggrieved, but she saw how intensely her son was upset. So she had that faith in God. She was very spiritual. Her name was Suniti. And Suniti means good behavior. The other wife was Suruchi, means good, you know, enjoyment. So she was a special soul. So somehow or other, she did what she thought was best for her son at great sacrifice, and that itself was giving up life for her son. Okay, there's some crazy sounds, Gail. Okay, any other questions?
Yeah, one question. I don't know where the sound is coming from, but yeah, when you were saying that, you know. When everybody is approaching the environment for their own enjoyment, there's bound to be conflict. But isn't it that even when devotees have conflicts over the best way to serve Krishna, you know, so in those instances, it doesn't seem like devotion eliminates conflicts.
Well, you know, when Radharani and Chandravali, they compete, right? But in pure devotion, in Radha's mood, if Chandravali can serve Krishna best, then I will serve her. So it's a different consciousness. It's all based on the pleasure of Krishna. It's not based on exploiting the world. So it has a completely different quality, because if it's a devotee, it's love.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have that duality. It's all pleasure. And the goal is Krishna's pleasure.
Okay, so conflict, but just different quality to the conflict.
Yeah, yeah. It's not looking at the world to exploit it. It's looking at the world
to please Krishna.
Yeah. Hi, Bo. I'm back. Anybody else like to say hello, and then I'll go. Because it's really getting late for me.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. It's Priya.
Priya, Hare Krishna. Is your mother back yet?
Yes. Yeah, she got back this morning.
Did you see her yet?
No.
Okay. I think she has some special things from India. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
From Vrindavan. Anyway, thank you, Priya, for coming on. That's great. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. This is Kota Gopinath and...
Kishori.
Oh. Okay.
You made it.
Wow, you made it, huh? How was your trip back?
Not bad. We made it back 2 hours ago.
Oh, really? Okay. How's your feelings of separation?
Intense.
We had to hear from Vrindavan if we weren't going to be in Vrindavan. So
yeah, it's really something when you get into Vrindavan, isn't it? Wow. Okay.
Yes.
Good for you.
Thank you again.
Well, when you have time, go see your daughter.
I will today. Today I'm gonna go. Bring the gift.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay,
Hare Krishna,
I'm going to head out now.
Gopa Kishore.
Okay, Gopa, Haribo.
Hi, Bob.
Great class. I liked it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to go now because it's like an hour past my bedtime. So, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.